How you doing today, John?
Ah, too bad. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I see you got a new hat there.
I do. I got a video I'm working on this weekend project, and just figure I should kind of wear it, figure out its fitment, if that makes any sense. It's big. It's bigger than the normal hats that I wear.
Did you have to go to your local haberdasher to get it made?
No, just Tractor Supply.
Gotcha.
It's time to hit the trail. Lock in those hubs and throw it into low range. Because you are listening to Wheelin' with Keith and Johnny Orange. Broadcasting from the Thin Line Off-Road Studio. They're here to talk about 4x4s, trucks, and everything to do with enjoying the great outdoors. Buckle up. Here's your hosts, Keith and Johnny Orange.
All right, there you go. Well, I'm Keith, and sitting across from me, of course, is Johnny Orange.
Hello,
and
hello.
You are listening to Wheelin'.
So, what's new with you, Keith? I know you were out of town for a little while there, weren't you?
I was. Went on a trip from Florida to California. I was helping a friend move, her mom, and I was driving a 32-foot, I think, U-Haul, the biggest one they make, of course.
Fun.
Yeah, over 2,000 miles, so that was that was a bit of a trip. Pretty much a non-adventurous adventure, for the most part, just driving along 10 most of the way.
Like 10 miles an hour? Or
no,
like
I-10.
M-10? Oh, okay.
And then she was driving a motorhome with grandma and her two cats and another friend in there.
I'd rather have the box truck.
Yeah.
Cats don't tend to travel very well.
Yeah, no, the cats did not travel very well. So we got her to San Diego, got everybody moved in. It worked out pretty well. At the very last minute, she switched over the driving responsibilities to me on the motorhome, so I got to drive the motorhome up to L.A.
Oh, wow.
To drop it off. And
sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was.
Get to experience traffic on the 405 while you were there at all?
I don't remember if it was on the 405, but I've been all over LA before. And
oh, nice.
So I was following the GPS, and 20 miles before my final exit to drop off this brand spanking new motorhome rental, only had 2,700 miles on it. Truck on the other side of the freeway lost a big old chunk of metal, and it took out my whole windshield. So yeah, so that was kind of fun.
Did you have to clean the seats up after that?
Yeah, I tell you, almost. I think I just about had a heart attack.
Wow.
So then dropped it off. Fortunately, that was fully insured, and that was pretty easy to go through. Grabbed a Lyft driver. They're like Uber, a Lyft driver, and had her drive me up to L.A. I had a couple hours before my flight home, so I decided to hit the Peterson's Automotive Museum. You ever been out to that before?
Nope. Furthest west I've been is Minnesota.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. It's a pretty cool museum. I've been there 3 times now. I've gone right after they opened. They're on their 25th anniversary right now.
Oh, wow.
I went right after they opened back in the 90s. And then I went again in the early 2000s. And then now they've completely renovated it from the outside and inside. So it looks completely different. It was pretty neat.
Cool.
But we got there an hour early. And so I said to the Lyft driver, I said, well, I'm kind of hungry. I said, there's a restaurant over there. It was like a 50s looking place. I said, why don't you drop me off there? And that way I can get some breakfast. So she's like, not a problem, So she drops me off there. And a really cool vintage-looking diner, And I get out, and she takes off, and I go walking up to it. And I look in, and it's empty. There's no food. There's no customers. There's no staff, anything. She had dropped me off at Bernie Sanders' California headquarters.
Oh.
His campaign headquarters.
Nice.
Yeah. So I ended up walking down the street to, the Golden Arches and getting some breakfast. And then
that
I went back
too.
To Peterson's. Did you see some of my pictures online?
I saw a couple of them, yeah.
Oh, there was all sorts of cool rigs in there, overlanding rigs.
Sweet.
They had
get back and check that out.
Absolutely. They had some movie vehicles, lots and lots of movie vehicles.
Nice.
They had ones from a lot of sci-fi movies. And then, of course, vintage vehicles as well, too. It's 3 stories, and then they have a basement. I didn't have time to do the private tour. I wanted to do the private tour. Mm-hmm. So I did the 3 stories, started in the 3rd level, worked my way down to the 1st level. And the 1st level is where all the movie cars are.
Nice.
So
Do they have the Ecto one?
No, they don't. They have the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Okay.
They have the only one that was actually used in all three films. Nice. So that was really cool.
Saw one of those going up to the boat last weekend.
Oh, Back to the Future version?
No, just a regular DeLorean just passed by, and I had to kind of double take and wasn't sure if I was half asleep or not. But
oh yeah,
it was a DeLorean. They're pretty cool.
They had all sorts from Blade Runner and the new Blade Runner movie.
Oh wow!
They just had the neatest things, and so I get down to the main level of the place, and I'm walking around, and they had a Transformers exhibit. And I'm looking at this Transformer exhibit, and they had Bumblebee, so they had this little yellow Volkswagen, and then they had the big Bumblebee that was he was standing there, the guy from the movie that unfolds and all that. So I'm looking at the big the Bumblebee exhibit, and there's these two little kids that are standing next to me, and they're just checking it out, and I can hear their mom, you know. And their mom is, talking to them. And she's asking them, if they like Bumblebee and they like the exhibits and all that. And, I'm standing there and I hear, and I'm like, man, her voice sounds really familiar to me. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, she sounds like Mila Kunis, that actress from that 70s show.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn, and it is Mila Kunis.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
So, and then standing behind her is her husband, Ashton Kutcher. I think they're married. Yeah.
I have no idea. But I don't follow
Ashton Kutcher, he's a heck of a lot taller than
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was pretty weird. So, but that was my little adventure in L.A. And, of course, I flew home, had a lot of, turbulence on the way home.
Oh, that's always fun.
Oh, yeah. It was good to get home.
I believe it.
But, this whole adventure driving across the country with a motorhome and then, of course, with my big box truck and, doing a little bit of camping, a little bit of hotels and all that kind of brings us into our subject for today. We wanted to talk about overlanding and what overlanding is. And we're going to get into some of the, the history of overlanding and what that is. You kind of prepared a lot of stuff for that today. I know prior to
the podcast. Through a bit.
Yeah, prior to the podcast, you were covering a lot of the stuff that you taught me a few more things. And so I guess to start out with that, what overlanding is, so our listeners know, is overlanding is really kind of defined as the use of a vehicle, a camper type vehicle, to go through the backcountry, to explore, to live out of. And it's kind of like, I forgot who said that quote, but I should have looked it up, but the quote is something along the lines of the journey is the destination. And so this is the type of hobby that people are into, that they travel looking for adventure, off-road, on-road, they're going along. Now, overlanding is as simple as, taking your Jeep and throwing a backpack in the back of your Jeep and a sleeping bag and going out for a couple of days. And it can be as extensive as spending many, many years or even decades in some cases. So John's telling me Emerson said that.
Yeah, okay.
Ralph Waldo Emerson. Indeed. Very cool. That's a very famous author there. Some families travel for decades overlanding out of very expensive rigs and whatnot. So the question really was, the history of overlanding, where did this start? Of course, people have been traveling and living on the road for millennia, way before vehicles. I mean, biblical times, people were doing this. So that's not really what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is the people that use vehicles to explore the backcountry. And of course, these are powered vehicles, typically four-wheel drive, not always. But these are people that are doing this out of vehicles. And, I did a lot of research on it, and what I found, and I was familiar with already, was the Vagabonds. Now, you did some research on the Vagabonds, too,
I did a little bit of looking, yeah. Those guys, they did some cool stuff.
Absolutely they did. So the Vagabonds was Henry Ford and Harvey Firestone and Thomas Edison, and there was one other guy too, right?
John Burroughs. Yep.
And they traveled. This was organized by Henry Ford. They traveled all over the United States or North America, mainly in the beginning, starting around 1915, with these Model Ts and Ford vehicles that they were just doing this adventure with.
Mm-hmm.
And they took several vehicles with them. They had full staffs that would put up tents, and they had people that would with kitchen cars, mm-hmm. things like that. And they did this from, what, 1915 to 1923, something like that?
They started in 15. They officially invited everybody else in 16. So it's noted as 1916 to 1924.
And when you say they invited everybody else, what do you mean by that?
Edison invited Ford, Burroughs, and Harvey to join them through notes I have here, the Adirondacks and Green Mountains.
And that was their first trip in 16?
As the group, yeah.
Okay, and they started calling themselves the Vagabonds.
Yeah.
So these were multi-week trips that they did in the summertime, and they were living out of these cars, and these were not four-wheel drives, but they were kind of backcountrying. And they were doing, this became very publicized. They were trying to show Americans that they could use their vehicles for travel. Of course, you had no interstate system at the time. This is the teens. America was very rural. The road system was mostly dirt across the U.S. And so they were showing that you could use these vehicles and you could go from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a heck of a lot of fun with them.
Oh, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And, you know, other people around the world, though, around the same time had the same idea. And I know one person you did a lot of research on was John Weston out of the UK, correct?
I did a little bit, read through a bunch on him.
Why don't you give us kind of a nutshell? You know, I know before you do that, even in our research, we found that John Weston really is going to probably need his own episode in the future.
Probably. I mean, the guy's been everywhere, done everything. It's crazy where this guy's been.
Absolutely. And if you're interested in looking up more information about John Weston, wasn't there a website you were telling me?
Yep. So the link I've got a lot of information from, and we'll of course have this on the website and Facebook page, is johnwestonaviator.co.uk.
Yeah, that's a really cool page. I went through there a lot and started reading some of the stories, and it's one of those rabbit holes. Just more and more information.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very interesting family, very interesting life. His entire family traveled with him.
Oh, yeah. Was it up the first few years of his daughter's life? She hadn't even known anything but travel.
So why don't you give us kind of a nutshell of the story of John Weston for a little bit here?
Well, I will do the best that I can on that. So let me scroll through some of the notes that I had here. So a lot of it, they believe his original family is British. There's no record of his birth anywhere, though. They can't find death records, marriage records, or anything for either of his parents. Said I didn't have a lot of these notes very organized. Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
So he's reportedly born in 1872. He passed away in 1950. Let's see what we got here.
Well, the meat of it with the overlanding, though, is that after... or during the time where he served with, was it the UK Royal Navy, was it? Or he was with the armed forces of some sort.
Yes.
He had decided to go traveling once he got out of the armed forces with his family. And he bought a truck, what would be called a cabin chassis truck today.
Yep.
And built a motorhome on it. And this is prior to... motorhomes being readily available. There wasn't companies that were building motorhomes. So he was
definitely one of the first people to build it.
Yeah, so he builds this wood-bodied traveling motorhome, and he takes his family over a several-year period through Europe, Russia, Africa. They go all over the place in this thing. They actually rebuild it a couple of times because they figure out what works and what doesn't work. And so he essentially is... the one who creates overlanding for Europe and...
Global travel.
Yeah, global travel. Yeah. The Vagabonds with Henry Ford was more in the U.S. And even backing up there, because this is a global thing. Overlanding is a global thing. The word overlanding actually started in Australia back in the 1800s. And they used that word, which really meant to move all of the sheep herds and things like that across. So that word, the etymology of that word has gone back to the Australians. So the Australians essentially invented the word overlanding. Mm. And then basically Henry Ford and Harvey Firestone and all those guys kind of started what would be called modern overlanding. We're not even really talking four-wheel drives at this point. We're talking vehicles, but they did some really rugged stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They were really back in the country. Why don't we take a quick break, John, and then we will continue on after the word from our sponsor.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Have you heard the good news? Now there's a local paper that people just can't seem to get enough of. It's the Thumbprint News. The Thumbprint News is free and full of interesting stories that focus on what's important in our lives. Stories that touch on this area's rich history, unique places, and the diverse cultures and people. You'll be in the know when you read the Thumbprint News. Go to thumbprintnews.com and read the paper online for free today.
And we're back. Just before the break, we were talking about John Weston and his family who traveled all over Europe and Africa in their custom-built truck. Like I said, we really want to do a whole episode on him in the future, so we don't really want to talk too much more about that at this point, but we did need to give him the honorable mention at this point that really himself and the Vagabonds, which if you go to the Henry Ford Museum, thehenryford.org, if you go to their website, you can find information about the Vagabonds as well. So Weston and Vagabonds, really that group of people, the Weston family and then the Vagabond group, are really the grandparents of overlanding, with a vehicle at least. They're the ones that started it off. And we want to talk more about both of them in potentially dedicated episodes in the future. So kind of moving on from them, though, speaking of overlanding, did you have anything else about the Westons or anything you wanted to mention, John?
Not so much about the Westons. I found a note that I forgot to mention, though, when we were talking about the Vagabonds.
Okay.
It was in 1921. President Warren Harding actually joined the group for a little while.
Yeah, I had read that at one point. I thought they'd visited him, but he actually joined and went on some of the trips,
too. He did. There was another president, Coolidge. They actually stopped at his home and visited him.
That's pretty cool.
So they visited one president, and they had another one actually touring around with them.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of neat photos on the Henry Ford website.
Oh, very cool stuff,
You can see a lot of what the Vagabonds did.
Couple links to some video, too, from then, which is pretty cool.
They have the newsreel footage and whatnot.
Very neat footage.
That's very cool. So they're the ones that kind of got overlanding shot into the public eye. And of course, by all means, there was a number of people that did that. But really what it did at the time was it started to turn people towards the idea of motorhomes and campers, which for the most part stayed on the road. And so through the 30s, which of course the Depression now, unless you had a lot of money, you weren't really out doing this kind of thing anyways. The 30s, the 40s, we had World War II. Even in the 50s, if you were camping, it was more staying on the road, either towing a trailer, or if you had one of these cabin chassis built motorhomes, which were not very common, you were mostly going to motorhome parks and things like that. Now, we can even talk again in the future, I know I say it a lot, but about the Tin Can Tourists, who were founded back way back in the day and traveled between Michigan and Florida and whatnot with their motorhomes, and they were one of the earliest motorhome traveling groups. But we're talking about the backcountry travel. And so the second boom of the backcountry travel, similar to what the Vagabonds and the Westons were doing, really started with what they called corporate trips. And there was a number of them in Australia, in Africa, in Mexico. And what these were these were trips. Some of them were even put on by the Airstream Corporation. But they were using trucks in the late 1950s, early 60s. They were using some of these now readily available four-wheel drive trucks, such as the Napcos, and then, of course, the factory built Fords with the four-wheel drive in the 60s and things like that. They were putting sliding campers in, and they were putting, you know, they were trying to use these chassis to build something that was a little more backcountry friendly. Going up to Alaska, once the Elkan Highway was finished after World War II, became very popular, but they had to camp on the side of the road. To this day, many people camp on the side of the road driving up to Alaska because there's not a lot of stopping points.
Never knew there was that much into that. Wow.
Yeah. So there's, so really the 60s started to be a boom on it, and then the 70s and whatnot. But it was nothing that had really gotten into the public eye at that point. It was still kind of these niche groups that were doing this. You're looking at your notes. It sounds like you, it looks like there's something you want to say over there.
Well, I know we're getting to where you're talking about some of these big expos they host for overlanding. Excuse me, sorry. And more to promote the overall sport and just getting out there and doing it kind of thing. Did you have a chance when you were out west to get to the Overlanding Expo? I know that was going on about the time you were out there.
Here's the thing on that. I knew that Overland Expo West was going on, but for some reason, I thought it had already happened 2 weeks prior. And I didn't realize it was happening the weekend I came home. I should have just changed my flight to Arizona and gone to it. They have some very cool stuff out there. I've yet to get to an Overland Expo. I've seen lots of pictures and videos from those.
Nice.
Someday I would like to do one of those. And the Overland Expos are really a gathering group for people that are into the overlanding today. Kind of, you know, backing up there, what overlanding is to this today is, like I said, people that are taking a rooftop tent on a Jeep.
Or an Aztec.
Or an Aztec. There you go. to all the way up to people that are buying surplus military vehicles.
Yeah.
Six-wheel drive things and building these aluminum or fiberglass bodies on the back of them.
Yeah.
Really the start of some of that. Was some of the things you were seeing coming out of Australia out of necessity for long travel in Australia.
Yeah.
But then here, at least in the U.S., you had Gary and Monica Westcott with their Turtle Expedition.
That thing is cool.
Yeah. So the Turtle Expedition people, they're on Turtle 5 now. Now, if you're interested in reading about the Turtle Expedition, I'd highly recommend doing that. It's turtleexpedition.com. And there's lots of great information on there. They started out in the beginning, you know, with their trucks, with the Turtle 1. The Turtle 1 that they called it La Tortuga Azul, or the Turtle 1. The original Turtle was built on a Land Rover, or I'm sorry, yeah, a Land Rover. I almost said Land Cruiser because that's what I'm into. It was built on a Land Rover chassis. And from that point, they ended up, you know, figuring out what they wanted to do, and they went to a Chevy truck chassis with the Turtle 2, and then they went to a Ford truck chassis with the Turtle 3, and then even the Turtle 5 now that they're on is another Ford Super Duty chassis. But these folks have been traveling for over 20 years, actually over 30 years. 1972 is when they started doing this, and they live full-time out of their four-wheel drive truck, and they travel all over the world. I think they've done six continents now.
Yep, they're the ones that went all the way across Russia, too.
Oh, did they? Now,
yeah,
did they
coast
do,
to coast.
Did they do the Road of Bones? Is that what they did?
I don't know what they called it. I just remember in my reading that they went through it.
Okay. The northern route through that, through like Siberia, is what they call the Road of Bones up there, that was put through by Lenin, and it was never finished. It was supposed to be an interstate system. And I'd love to do that someday myself. But so these overlanding vehicles, to give you a picture of what we're looking at, these are not your Jeeps up on 40-inch tires that are meant for hardcore wheeling. Typically, your overland vehicles are on stock size tires up to maybe 35s, not really highly lifted. They're more of a camper on wheels. And that's what they're meant to be, you know, used for. So they're still very well outfitted. You know, they'll have larger fuel tanks. They'll have a winch, all those types of things. What other equipment do you typically see on the overland vehicles, John?
A lot of water tanks, a lot of water storage. Like you said, extra fuel is probably the biggest thing. Odds and ends of spare parts, spare tires, things like that, just to make sure if you break down, you can get out.
Well, yeah, because you're going to be in the back country, and you know, you have to be self-reliant on this.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you and I both have history in the scuba world.
Oh, yeah.
And in the tech diving scuba world, there's a whole, what would you call it, a whole movement, the DIY movement.
DIR.
Or DIR.
Yeah.
Do it right. And part of that is, you know, not only to do it correctly, but at the same point to be completely self-sufficient.
Essentially, they're more concerned with procedures and equipment, making sure everything is the same across everybody on the team. The self-reliance is more just, the more self-reliance is just personal diving. You know, you get to that level of diving, you have to be able to rely on yourself to get out of a problem or a situation. You still dive in buddy teams, but for the most part, you want to make sure that you have a backup light, or if you're diving a rebreather, that you have enough bailout gas, you know, to get you out.
So, you know, with like overlanding then, it's a similar comparison because in the overlanding world, you are quite often by yourself, or, you know, with your spouse or your friend who's going with you, but you don't have multiple vehicles.
Correct.
So, you know, when we go on off-road trips, quite often as off-roaders, we have 5, 6, 7, 8 rigs. If somebody has a problem, other rigs are there to help them get out. Other rigs are there to tow you back to the trailhead. With overlanding, you might be 500 miles from civilization.
Or more.
Exactly. In your own vehicle, you know, and you don't have a secondary vehicle there. You might have a satellite phone. You might have a ham radio. But even if you have those things, you still need to be able to get yourself unstuck.
Oh, yeah.
You need to be able to get yourself repaired. So.
And if you can't, you got to be able to survive so you can get help.
Well, exactly. It's a survivalist type of thing.
Yep.
So, you know, overlanding can be done on the weekends, but typically these people that are into the hardcore overlanding, this is a real lifestyle that they live.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they learn all sorts of things. You know, they accidentally sever a finger in a winch cable, they need to know how to stop the bleeding and get it, you know, taken care of.
That's going to be a pretty bad day if that happens.
It happened to a buddy of mine in the UP. Yeah,
that's so unfortunate.
Yeah, those types of things can happen. So yeah, this is overlanding is a very, very cool hobby or a off branch of off-road adventure and going wheeling and things like that.
Absolutely.
So we definitely wanted to mention this. You know, kind of going up through the timeline here of overlanding, we talked about the corporate trips. We're jumping around a little bit, but when we got up to the Turtle Expedition and some companies started to see what they were doing, a number of companies in the U.S. and other parts of the world started to take notice because people wanted to do what the Turtle Expedition people were doing. And they wanted to be able to build something that people could just buy.
Yeah.
And you've seen a number of those out there that are now ready to buy vehicles that people can buy and get into overlanding?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites that I keep coming across is the Earth Roamer.
Oh, those things are cool.
Wow. Now, whew, that's impressive.
Yeah, the Earth Roamers are typically based on the Super Duty chassis all the way from the F-350. They might not even make them that small. It might be the F-550.
Pretty sure it's just the 550 now.
The 550. And then they also have the 650, the what is that called? The XV-1 or something like that?
I just saw that. The XV is what they build it
the
on.
The XV, yeah. So these, you know, start around $500,000, go up to like $2 million for these big overlanding vehicles. Obviously, they're not in everyone's budget, but they are super cool. They have beadlock wheels, and they've got you know, they're a little bit lifted, military style tires.
Yeah,
very, very heavy duty. I saw a couple of them when I was driving up to Alaska myself years ago, and
yeah, a lot of these they're all, every single one of them's custom built. There's some neat videos on their website you go through, and they'll give you a full walkthrough on them. There's one they give you the full, it's a 45-minute video tour of it, and just how they build them for comfort and to get you where you want to go.
And that's earthroamer.com. You can go to earthroamer.com and check those out. They're not a sponsor. We'd love them for them to be a sponsor, but we're just kind of talking about what they do and how we're fanboys of those. So.
Oh, my God. I'd love to have one of those things. So nice.
Well, why don't we have a word from our sponsors here real quick, John?
Sounds like a good time. Sounds good.
Puppies are cute. Spiders are not. Spiders are creepy and ugly. But what will you do? You will call ABC Home and Commercial Services. The Spider Fighters can service your home for these unwelcome guests. ABC Spider Fighters will provide the solution for your spiders, wasps, box elder bugs, Asian lady beetles, cluster flies, and all your visiting insects. Call now for a prepaid discount. ABC Home and Commercial. The Spider Fighters. 810-794-5678.
All right, Keith and Johnny Orange, we're back after our break here. We were talking about overlanding. We did a whole history of it and where it brought us up to today of some of the fancy machines they have. John, you think you're ever going to get into overlanding yourself?
If I ever get the budget to do it, yeah. To get into the big scale like that is a little out of my reach.
What's the difference between, say, doing this for a hobby and just living out of your car?
Probably the size of the vehicle. I know plenty of people have lived in smaller vehicles for whatever reason or another. To knock that. Stuff happens. If in the terms of the off-road, though, the four-wheel drive and then definitely the size of the vehicle, how much equipment, your gear and stuff you're able to bring with you.
The ability to keep moving, too.
Yes, exactly.
Pay for the fuel, because I'm sure most of these big overland vehicles are not getting 40 miles a gallon.
No. There was one of the things I was reading on, I think it said he was lucky to get 5 miles to the gallon on it.
Woo!
Yeah, I want to say that may have been Weston's first vehicle.
Oh, that's way back when gasoline was probably 3 cents a gallon.
That's true, yeah. So nowadays, I don't think anybody would be crazy enough to do that.
I would love to get into overlanding more so than what I've done in the past. The most I've done is, say, with my old Jimmy, I used to throw a sleeping bag in the back of it and occasionally a little propane buddy heater. But that was about it. I never really did the full camper vehicle overlander myself. What would your dream overlander be? What in your vision?
Oh, man. It'd probably have to be one of those earth roamers.
Really?
If budget were part of the equation, I think I'd have to go with one of those earth roamers. It's a thing really decked out, custom, four-wheel drive, the extended fuel tanks and all that.
Of course.
Just get away from everything.
Yeah.
Go where the cell phones don't reach. That would be my ideal.
I got to agree with you. Those earth roamers are pretty awesome. Mm. And that's kind of right about the size that I like. I'm not really a big fan of the giant one that they make.
That one is a little big, but there's some smaller ones that are surprisingly large on the inside and still small enough on the outside to be reasonable to use.
Yeah, they kind of remind me of that tent from Harry Potter. I don't remember what they call that tent, but the one where, from the outside it's the size of a two-person pump tent, and they go inside and it's just absolutely, a mansion.
Throw that in the back of a Wrangler, we're all set.
That tent?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to find that Harry Potter guy. Find Daniel Radcliffe and say, hey, man, we need that tent,
That would be cool. One day, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. We hit a lot of subjects on this one. We probably jammed too much into this episode, just kind of giving a picture of what overlanding is. We would encourage our listeners, if you are still not fully picturing what overlanding is, there's a Wikipedia page for overlanding. Just Google overland vehicles.
Expeditionportal.com.
Yes.
Huge online resource for all of that. All the information, web links, write-ups on vehicles, different things you can do for it, places to get more information, all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely. They've got a forum on there as well. Yep. I am on there myself. And I don't do much overlanding per se. I do more off-roading, but that is a great forum. It's actually in the age of forums dying. There's not a lot of very active online forums anymore.
Yeah.
This one is still a huge, very active online worldwide community, and there's people posting hourly trip reports and things like that all around the world. And if you're sitting there at work and you know you want to look at some awesome pictures of some overland trips, I would recommend checking out Expedition Portal for sure.
And you mentioned about the Overland Expo. Mm-hmm. There's actually an Eastern and a Western show.
There is.
Yeah, the Western show happened, was it last week or the week before?
Yeah, it would have been last weekend.
The show on the East, I believe it was in Vermont or West Virginia maybe, is actually going to be in October this year. So there's still time to go.
Oh, we may have to see. That could be something to go to for sure. One of the cool things, too, that they do at the Overland Expo shows is it's not just a show where they have a parking lot car show showing vehicles, but it is also an educational show. So they have people that are there teaching first aid. They have people that are teaching recovery methods, people that are there teaching about new products that have come to the market.
All kinds of equipment, classes, booking for trips and stuff like that.
Exactly. And that's something that you can still get involved in too. If you're interested in overlanding and you don't have an overland vehicle, there are a number. I don't actually know of any of the websites right now, but I know I've found them before. There's a number of resources out there where you can sign on to an overlanding trip with a kind of a tour, and they'll take you along. I've seen pictures. I know a friend of mine about 3 or 4 years ago did a 2-week one in Southern Africa. And basically they had to pay for, you know, all their expenses and whatnot. There was drivers. They didn't drive the vehicles, but they got to go along and
I remember reading some of that stuff. Yeah, the people on the trip are responsible for setup, tear down, all that kind of stuff.
It's similar to the old Vagabonds again, where it's kind of like a little on the fancier end, you know?
Yep.
Unfortunately, overlanding today, there is a division between kind of the grizzled old timers that are doing this for the fun of it and whatnot, and the people that are building rigs that look like overlanding rigs just to be Instagram famous.
Yeah.
And so nothing wrong with that. You want to build an awesome rig and do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, it's more interesting to see the trip stories, to see the adventures, to see where they got stuck, to see...
Like you said, hear more about the journey than the destination.
Exactly. Yeah. It's more about the journey than it is the destination. Or the destination is the journey, is what it is. What did I say earlier? I had
the
quote
right.
It's
not the destination, it's the journey.
Yeah, there you go. No, the journey is the destination. We're going
to
argue.
Made a point to write that down.
This
Maybe
is pretty bad. This is pretty bad for someone who was an English major in college and read a lot of Emerson. I remember you said it was an Emerson quote.
Yep.
I believe it is the journey is the destination.
No, it's not the destination, it's the journey. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
It's not the destination, it's the journey. Okay. Yep. There's other ones that are similar to that too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, but John, anything else you want to say about overlanding?
Not so much overall. I mean, you know, we keep talking about all these cool rigs and all that. You don't have to do it in those. I mean, you can do it on the cheap. You can do the, you know, load up your excursion or something and take everybody out and go camping.
Well, and we've done that, actually.
Yeah.
So the closest thing I've done to an overlanding trip, last summer we did almost 2.5 weeks. We took the whole family. There was 7 of us in the excursion, and we went around. We went from here out to Moab, Utah, did some traveling around Moab, went down into California, and then we went across the Southwest into Texas, and we camped about half the time on that trip in some pretty rustic places. We did a little bit of off-roading, back trails around Moab, a little bit in Nevada, a little bit in Louisiana. Didn't do a ton of off-roading, so it was still a lot of highway miles, but we did. We lived out of the excursion.
That's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. And I have another friend that actually does a winter wheeling run that we've gone to multiple times, but for a few years ago, he essentially lived out of his TJ Jeep.
Oh, wow.
For his job, he took and he would go around with his little Dutch oven that he would put in the front and cooked meals out of that and put a tent up wherever he was. Same thing. I've got another old wheeling buddy that's into Land Cruisers, kind of introduced me to Land Cruisers up in the UP.
Nice.
And he has lived out of his for, you know, extended periods of time. He works for the Forestry Service.
Oh,
so,
wow. Cool.
You know, people do this. You don't have to have a $2 million rig to be into overlanding.
No. I mean, it helps, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, as we get older and we want that kitchen and that shower and that stovetop and, you know, if you want that TV and that microwave and all that, you can do that. So,
yeah, I'm more of the cast iron pan tent and, you know, just go swim in the creek for a little while instead of the whole shower and everything.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways to do this. Overlanding is a very strong part of the off-roading community. It's getting bigger each year. It's really gotten big since about the 1990s, and it is getting bigger each year, especially with these expos. It used to just be one Overland Expo a year. Now they have East and West. They've split it off. So, well, I think if we're going to be wrapping this up, we should mention a few things. Of course, I'm Keith, and we've got Johnny Orange over here. I'm with Thin Line Off-Road, and then our producer Andrew is down there, as always, doing his fantastic work with all the electronics that we have in front of us.
It's all magic to me.
Absolutely. We have a few sponsors that have been supporting us so far. We've got Foxfire Fixins, ABC Home and Commercial Services, a new sponsor, Quick Draw Adapters. You're going to be seeing some ads from them coming up, or Quick Draw Brand. They make some awesome adapters. And that's about it. You got anything you want to plug today, John?
Not much more than that. I'll kind of borrow a phrase from Earthroamer. You know, their kind of thing is live your dream. So if you want to get out there and go camping, you want to get out there, you know, live in a big expedition grade vehicle like that, go for it. Just get out there and do it.
So we'll sign off with that. Live your dream.
Have a good one, everybody.